This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, a senior fellow, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago. Writing in Defining Ideas, observations about what can explain the shortfall of recruiting for the U.S. military these last years. Richard offers multiple innocent explanations, which I will list very quickly before we get to the other considered factors. Low unemployment means there are a lot of opportunities besides the military. At the same time, college is attractive to many families in an environment where there is aid and increasing emphasis on professionalism. There's also the possibility that all of this could be reversed by signing bonuses. However, we're setting that down as the possibility of low recruitment rates. Richard comes to the first thing that is a puzzle about today's military. Richard, a very good evening to you. Global warming, how does this go together with the U.S. military and the recruiting shortfall? Good evening to you.
Well, first of all, what happens is the general global explanation that one has to offer is there's a decreasing confidence on the part of people who are at the age of being recruited in the general soundness of the way in which the military has been run. One of the key initiatives of the current Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, is he has to say we need climate resilience. And so you're sitting there and you're trying to figure out what is your short-term priority. And, well, I mean, the short term matters. It's potential violence in the Taiwan Straits. It's instability in the Middle East. It's the entire situation with Ukraine. There's still the uneasiness about Western Europe. And this guy is trying to figure out how it is that he makes a military force that will be zero carbon intensive in the year 2050. This is just a massive diversion of resources. First of all, he doesn't have any clear sense of what it is that counts for a global emergency, and he doesn't therefore know what he's doing. But it is, has the necessary consequence that we don't put more capital ships on the line. You don't teach people how to work with explosives, intelligence, and all the other stuff you've done. You're diverting it. And if you then treat this as a kind of a signal, the people who are generally attracted to the military, most of whom are sort of more conservative and patriotic than the average American, this is just a sign that there's terrible forms of leadership. And so the question you have to ask yourself is, do you want to serve for an administration that seems to have the wrong set of priorities and won't provide you with the morale and materials which will allow you to have a winning force? And so this is a part of the larger value over the military, which is whether or not the traditional values about how the military works on technical excellence and takes political guidance from outside of it, all of this is now being undermined. And so it's both an actual preparedness sign that I think is driving this on the one hand, but it's also a signal of the fact that we have an administration which has got whacked up priorities. And I regard, having watched him on a number of fronts, and Lloyd Austin is one of the worst secretaries of defense ever to take that office in a cabinet which is filled with people who I think are in general extraordinarily weak.
The puzzle about global warming extends not just to the military recruiting story, it's the politics of the moment. I mention that reporting in the London Times and the London Spectator, there is reason to believe there is a popular revolt against green policies called net zero in the UK by both the Labour government that is potential for the next general election and the sitting Tory government. There's an incident in downtown London that again underlines how sensitive the public is to global warming politics. There was a decision by the mayor of London to put up signs called ULEZ, having to do with ultra-low emission zones. And if you didn't have the right kind of vehicle in that zone, you would be paying 12.5 pounds per day in order to drive your vehicle into this zone. The public has rejected it uniformly. They lost a by-election because of it. And this is pointed to connecting to other places where there's a revolt, such as in Germany. The Greens, who represent the early thinking of global warming, have done poorly in a by-election, poorer than they've done in 20 years. So I mention this. And Germany, because it's now in recession or near to, there is a revolt against what is called the insane bureaucracy of green advocacy. Now, that could also be going on here, but I don't hear it to the extent that I hear it in Europe, Richard.
Well, I think it is less dramatic in this country, but you see it coming up at the seams in all sorts of local elections. There have been proposals in New York City with all of its terrible situations to put very high green taxes on old buildings that don't have the right kind of heating systems and so forth. And these things are being uniformly rejected by local tenants. They are all in favor of controlling global warming. They don't want to learn on that issue at all, but they always want somebody else to pay the tax. And well, you can't keep pushing the tax onto somebody else, because sooner or later somebody has to end up holding the bag. And I think it's going to come here quite quickly, because if you just look recently at the Maui type situation, the original reports were, oh, this is a global warming phenomenon. And then you see all the stuff about how terrible forest management, terrible management of the electrical system, incompetent policing on the short term. And what people realize now is if you see any kind of natural disaster, so-called, first think of human interventions of an incompetent nature and only worry about global warming very far back on the end of the list. And so what happens is it's clear that the priorities are wrong. And if they're wrong for the civilian force, what's going to happen is you're going to basically take the military and have them do all sorts of things that are going to be wasteful instead of having them do things that are useful. Now, let me mention one of the problems. As warfare becomes more technical, the various kinds of equipment you need become more specialized. And so you can't take a uniform force and hope that in one day you could deploy it to the Arctic and another day you could deploy it to the equator. What you need to do is to have specialized forces and specialized equipment to maximize your ability to work in all these domains. If you're spending all your time worrying about the sort of climate resiliency feature, you're not going to be able to develop the kinds of forces that are going to be able to work worldwide. And so there's a real cost that you're paying by devoting energy to something that's utterly wasteful and foolish. You cannot devote the resources you need to things that really matter to the way the military starts to operate. And I think as one looks closer at the fires in Maui and the fires in California and so forth, you will realize it's institutional incompetence driven by the great fear that somehow or other the emissions of carbon dioxide are going to end the world. You then put into place a variety of stupid forest measures, and you have massive burning of trees everywhere. And the amount of harm that is caused by global warming or to the environment of old-fashioned type, you know, there's a lot of soot and dirt and crap in all of this air, is far greater than anything you get by way of the saving. And the effort to try to cut down on carbon dioxide emissions to the extent that they want means that other kinds of emissions and other kinds of breakdowns are going to become much more likely, and so that we will live in a less safe, more dangerous, more volatile world, because what we do is we get our priorities completely warped. And this administration has a sort of generalized view on global warming that covers every area from the Securities and Exchange Commission to the military. And it's exactly that state of mind, which is reducing the competence of our military and therefore reducing its attractiveness to the public at large.
60,000 National Guard and Reserve soldiers were cut off without pay and benefits as of April 2022. At least 8,000 military personnel were separated from the service under general less than honorable discharges. Why? Because they did not obey the COVID-19 mandate vaccine of the U.S. military. Richard, you cite this as a major contributor to the shortfall. How so?
Well, I mean, here you're telling people, we want you to come into the Army. You are reading story after story about people who have received vaccination and then suffer some kind of an adverse event. The most recent one was Bronny James, LeBron James' son, 18 years old in the peak of health, and he collapses on a basketball court having been vaccinated. Well, you start looking around and see whether or not there are any systematic theories. And here's what you find out. If you commote to the CDC and the FDA, there's just nothing there that's even worth talking about. They keep on putting forward that there's no new information. These things are as safe as ever. You look at the press on the other side giving you detailed information about particular people who've had stuff. You find out that there's an increased rate of myocarditis and a number of other very serious conditions. It turns out that mRNA is not MRA. MRA, it is a variation of that. And biology is extremely specific to small changes in chemicals. So you take a natural substance and put something in order to improve one dimension, you're going to wreck everything else. So there are large numbers of people, myself included, would think that it would be foolish and unwise for anybody to take a vaccine. Now, what's the target population? It turns out, as it was explained to me, is that young people in many ways are now more vulnerable to the vaccine than other people for the following reason. They're in fit condition, so their heart muscles look a little bit more like their arm muscles. And when the virus comes, it turns out for these people, the heart is a more attractive host than it is for other people, which is why you get pericarditis and you get myocarditis and all these other funny diseases. And it turns out there's a medical explanation for it. And so people say, I don't want to take this stuff. And what Lloyd Austin says is, well, you know, 1.2 million people died of COVID. Well, the number is essentially wrong and wrongheaded in what it does. But he doesn't actually look to the particular condition in these cases, doesn't look to the medical evidence, doesn't even examine the own record in the service academy, where the number of adverse incidents after 2021 went up fivefold. And what does the military do? He said, well, we miscounted for the previous 5 years, which was clearly wrong. And so what you're doing is everybody understands that this is a serious risk. Why would you want to stay? And so when they throw these people out at a time when there's a man shortage, and when they don't even ask the question, if you got the disease and you took ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine in the first 3 or 4 days, are you going to be better or worse? And if you start looking all over the globe, it turns out that these medicines after the fact are much superior to the vaccine before the effect. It's not that they have any safety risks. They've been used billions of times for 30 or more years. People say, oh, no, take Paxlovid. But that drug has a lot of uncomplicated or the complicated side effects that are not fully understood. So you have all the wrong medicines coming out of the Biden administration. And I regard this as a sort of national scandal. And if you're a young person going in there and you actually read some of this stuff and you don't want to take the vaccine, why would you want to expose yourself to a regime which is utterly dogmatic? The people with general discharges, I might add, are not in great shape. They lose all their military benefits, and they're done arbitrarily. So even after Congress stops the process of throwing people out of the service, they don't take anybody back. And now, just since I wrote the column, there's a lawsuit by people asking that they be given honorable discharges, to which I think they're entitled to. I think the level of collective ignorance in the Biden administration on the way in which one deals with vaccines is legendary. And they don't even talk about people on the other side. The most frightening thing about this is if you have something to say, you better not try to say it in any fashionable channel because you're going to be ruled out of order. I mean, I received from NYU, notice we follow the CDC when it comes to health recommendations. And I say to myself, that's not what I want my university to be doing. I think, in effect, that they have to be subject to the same kind of scrutiny as everybody else is. And there's no mantra of government authority which allows you to essentially dictate outcomes inconsistent with the evidence. The military is a very top-down, closed institution. And so when you get bad leadership, which is what we have now, this is going to start to multiply. And when it starts to multiply, you're going to see the number of people who are willing to sign up to go down because they don't want to have to be put to a choice between their bodily health on the one hand and their ability to remain in the military on the other.
Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, a senior fellow, teaches law at NYU and University of Chicago, writing at Defining Ideas about possible explanations, credible explanations for the shortfall in recruiting of all the major services. We turn next to a specific matter, Board of Visitors. This has to do with politics in the Pentagon. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.